Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. Tonight's shiur is sponsored by Ari and Rachel Abrams in memory of Ari's father, Chaim Eliezer ben Chaim Yaakov Halevi, Robert Abrams, Alav Shalom, and in memory of Ari's grandfather, David ben Avraham, David Greenbaum, Alav Shalom. As well as for his grandmother, Rivka Bas Yosef Rita Abrams, Alav Shalom, on the occasion of their yahrzeits sites, and in the zchus of our learning together, may all the neshamas indeed have a great aliyah. Okay, so tonight, folks, we are going to move forward in our story of David and establishing his throne in Yerushalayim. And if last week we spoke about the mishap, if you will, of the first attempt to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim, and the tragedy that ensued with Uzzah's interference, if you will, or interposing himself by either causing or noticing that the Aron was slipping or might slip, and he touched the Aron. So I'm going to go back to those psukim and take a look again at that story about Uzzah and what Uzzah did and the consequences of it, and then I would like to also look at the next story, which is the second round of bringing the Aron up to Yerushalayim, not the second round in history of bringing the Aron from one place to another. That's happened before, but the second time, the second attempt of David HaMelech to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim, and this time David successfully brings the Aron without incident, or at least without an incident that produces a death penalty by Hashem. So, big picture, what I want to do tonight is look at the story of the delivering of the Aron, in which Uzzah seemingly does something terrible and pays the price for it. And then the second round of when they try to bring the Aron up to Yerushalayim, David HaMelech seems to do something which is objectionable, at least in the eyes of Michal, and not entirely, not that much different, if you will, than what Uzzah did, but very different, very different consequences. So that's the big picture. Let's dive into it. So if you have your Navi open in front of you, let's see here. We are in Shmuel Beis, Perek Vav, and I'm sharing my screen with you now if you do not happen to have a Navi in front of you. Okay, so here we are in the middle of chapter 6, or towards the beginning of chapter 6. No, wrong parak here. I mean, wrong Shmuel. Let's go to Shmuel Beis. Let's try that again. And here we are, Shmuel Beis, chapter 6. Okay. So, chapter 6, pasuk 3. Vayarkivu es Aron Elohim el hagalah chadasha, vayisauhu mi beis Avinadav asher begivah, ve'uza ve'achyo bnei Avinadav nohagim es hagalah chadasha. Chapter 6, pasuk 3. We were reminded of what we did last week. They load the Aron up. They bring it towards Yerushalayim. The sons of Avinadav, Uzza and Achyo, are guiding the process. Vayisa'uhu mi beis Avinadav, v'achyo holech lifnei Aaron. Achyo was in front of the Aaron. V'David v'chol beis Yisrael misachakim lifnei Hashem. And David and all of the Jewish people are misachakim. So that's an interesting word, misachakim. Misachakim is translated here by the JPS as they were dancing in front. They were dancing in front of Hashem. And I think it was Sadel last week who pointed out that the Chet HaEgel, the Jews were also dancing. So it seems like it's not necessarily a description of great, of great awesome
reverence and, you know, and apparently, you know, things spin out of control over here. So David Chol Beisrael Misachakim Lefnei Hashem, Kinoros, Tupim, Emananim, Uve Tzaltzalim. So just before we go on any further, I want to take a look at the Psukim by Cheta Egel. Right. So just to sum up over here for a second, if we take a look at the events of Uzzah and bringing up the Aaron and the events of Shmuel bringing up the Aaron, there seems to be more similarities here than differences. They both bring up the Aaron. There's both dancing going on. There's both seems to be frivolous behavior. But in one case, we have terrible consequences for Uzzah. And in the other, we have what we're about to witness here, which is Michal's rebuke of David. Vayomer David al Michal, if Ne Hashem, she rebukes him, and she says, Asher bachar b'cha ve'avicho mikol besel etzavos osim negir alam Hashem al Yisrael, v'sichakti l'fnei Hashem. Vatomer, ma nichbad hayom melech Yisrael. Michal says to Shaul, you know, somewhat sarcastically over here, she says, "You didn't cause great honor today as the king of Israel." You conducted yourself in front of the people like a boar, like a plebeian, like a lowlife, like a commoner. Vayomer David al Michal, and now David speaks to Michal. Doesn't say Michal Bashol, right? When Michal rebukes him, she's called Michal Bas Shaul. But now David responds to her. And he says to her, Vayomer David al Michal, it's his wife, right? She's not Bas Shaul. Asher bachar bimei avicha, umikol beso, letzavos osi nagid alam Yisrael, v'sichakti lefanav. Says, you know, Hashem chose me instead of your father, Michal Bas Shaul, right? Right? And why did Hashem choose me? Well, whatever reason is, and I think if we tease out the psukim, we'll see what's going on here. But Hashem chose me in place of your father and in all of his family to be the ruler over Bnei Yisrael. And gosh darn it, v'sichakti lefnei Hashem, I am going to dance before Hashem. And if that means unekalosi od mizos vayisi shafel be'enai, and if that means that I am now like a commoner, I am a person, a regular person, maybe somebody even on the low rung of the social ladder, if that's the consequence that I dishonor myself, vayisi shafel be'enai, I am willing to do that. I'm willing to make myself small in the eyes of Hashem. V'im ha'amahos asher amart imam ikaveda. But amongst the slave girls that you speak of, don't worry, Michal, I will be honored. Ula Michal Bashaul lo hayala yaled ad yom osa, and Michal, the daughter of Shaul, now she's back to being the daughter of Shaul again, had no children until the day she died. And I think the simple way of reading this, but she did have children. I mean, she had no children after this point. So we have... two stories here. We have the story of Uzzah. We have the story of David and Michal. Uzzah brings up the Aaron. He touches the Aaron. He's killed in the context of frivolous behavior, people dancing and all of that. David brings up the Aaron. It's a frivolous event. Michal criticizes him for the frivolity. David defends himself. And how does the Navi come out? Does the Navi accept Michal's critique, or does the Navi accept David's defense? Yeah, go ahead.
Obviously, I think David's defense, because it says Michal was did not have children after that.
Right.
It says again, Michal Bashaul.
Right. So the Navi. Right. So the Navi seems to accept David's defense, right? There is no rejoinder after that. And the only thing that the Navi tells us after David defends himself against Michal's critique is simply that she didn't have any children afterwards, and Chazal understand that to be a punishment for her rebuking David. So we have a couple of questions here. What's really the difference between what happened in the story of Uzzah and what happens over here? What's Uzzah's great sin, and what is David's apparent great sin, which turns out not to be a sin? In other words, if you were reading the Psukim, would you agree with Michal's critique, or would you agree with David's defense? I'm just curious. Does anybody have a thought about that? Would you agree? I mean, after the whole story of Uzzah, would you agree with Michal's critique, or would you agree with David's defense? Anybody? Okay. So.
Hi, Babylon.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I think it all depends on how the dancing was and what it was for. And this time around, it wasn't done for frivolity, but because he was so excited to have the Aron before Hashem. There was a different reason.
Okay.
And it was David after all, and David was actually a shepherd. He actually was.
Okay.
So is he sort of like a commoner? He always was like, didn't make much of himself, even though he was king and stuff.
Okay. All right, good. So let's take a look go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I think Michal isn't criticizing him for doing something similar to Uzzah, reaching out and touching in your own,
right,
showing disrespect to Hashem. She's criticizing that he's showing disrespect to her vision of what the honor of a king should be.
Okay, good. That's a very important distinction. Okay.
Yeah, so it seems to me she's not criticizing that he's disrespecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She's criticizing that he's disrespecting the office and her husband, the king, and the role of the king, and so... It sounds like they're talking two different languages almost.
Okay, good. I think that's a valuable distinction to be made. Whether Michal is criticizing him for the frivolity or not, I think the question still becomes, why is it not a problem when David does it? And if Esther is correct, that it's a different context. This is not frivolous, but Uzzah's situation was frivolous. Where is there any indication of that in the Psukim? So
just one other thing.
Yeah.
Did you read out loud? I can't recall from 2 minutes ago. But in Pasuk Tes Zayin, when it's talking about Michal's reaction, it says Vatives lo believa.
Thank you. I did not read that far, but I should.
Yeah.
The pasuk says, "V'David mecharker b'chol oz lefnei Hashem." David is dancing, and then it says that she sees him mefazezu mecharker, and the pasuk concludes, "Vatives lo beliba." She saw this as a terrible dishonor. Very demeaning behavior. Okay. So, we've bit off quite a bit here. I'm not sure if it's too much for us to chew tonight, but let's at least start and perhaps we can finish as well. So what is the sin of Uzzah? Let me share my screen with you. Okay, let's go back to Pasuk 6 over here.
Didn't they bring it in the wagon, and this time around they held it correctly on their shoulders?
Right. They didn't hold it correctly, and he wasn't qualified to serve in that position,
I think so, too.
Okay. Done. Let me just...
All
right, so let's take a look at what the Mefarshim have to say over here. I'm sorry?
The Levite's supposed to move the ark.
Right. Okay, so Rashi says that here's the sin of Uzzah. Vayicharaf Hashem be'Uzzah. Hashem was very upset with Uzzah, and he smote him on the spot there. Why? Al hashigiga. For the following mistake. Shehaya lo lidrosh kal v'chomer. Because Uzzah should have understood something on his own. Nos av nosei bayardein, hu atzmo lo kol shekein. If, when the Jewish people crossed the Jordan, when they entered Eretz Yisrael, nos av, those who were carrying it, nosei bayardein, those who carried it themselves were carried by the Aron, hu atzmo lo kol shekein. So certainly Uzzah should have realized that he, would have been carried by the Aron, and the Aron didn't need to be carried by him. Now it seems to me that Rashi is not telling us that there is an avera in that he was the wrong person to carry the Aron, because he wasn't a Levi and was supposed to be on the shoulders. Because if that were the case, there are plenty of psukim in the Torah that tell us that it's the role of the Levium. If that were the case, Rashi would have said, Uzzah should have known the pasuk in the Torah, or should have known the tradition of our people, that this is the role of the Levium. And yet, Rashi says, it's because he didn't make this kal v'chomer. And what's the kal v'chomer that he should have made? That the people who carry the Aron, they're actually carried by the Aron. So it seems to me that what Rashi is going for here is not about so much the fact that he broke a rule, but it's that he broke a rule as a consequence of not thinking clearly. And I would argue that not thinking clearly is because this was in the light of a frivolous behavior. The previous pasuk says, where does it say over here? By David, v'chol beis Yisrael misachakim lefnei Hashem. They are dancing in front of Hashem. U'bakinoros u'nevalim u'vetupim u'vemenanim u'vetzaltzalim. So David and the whole people here are dancing, right? And in that context, he's not thinking. Uzzah isn't thinking clearly. So it's not simply that he broke a rule; it's he broke a rule as a consequence of this of the frivolous behavior. Right now, the Malbim says something slightly different. The Malbim says over here, "Shehayu masachakim derech schok lo kesimcha bira'ada." They were dancing with frivolity, not dancing in reverence. Shlohay al dei klei shir hamiyuchadim lavoda, velo al yidei halaviyim hamiyuchadim lazer, rak kol beis Yisrael kulo, uvechol atzei broshim. This was not the ceremony of the Levites. This was a mob of the Jewish people. And therefore, so now let's skip down to the next pasuk. What was Uzzah's problem? So says the Malbim, he forgot the kedusha of the Aron, upachad Hashem, and the reverence of Hashem. Biodo imaron Elokim, v'zechet gadol minaso hashocheach yiras hamelech beodo omed lefanav. And this is a very grievous sin, a sin. I thought
you were with me. I was reading here, but I guess I didn't share my screen with you. The Malbim says, "Al sheshal v'shachach kedushas Aron," that he forgot the kedusha of the Aron, and to be oblivious to the kedusha, to the awe and the reverence of Hashem in this place and this moment of time, is super, super brazen. It's a big chutzpah. It's like one thing if you do it, when you're doing whatever, but here, like mamish in the presence of Hashem, to have that type of irreverence is a terrible sin. So neither Rashi nor the Malbim focuses on the fact that they broke a rule. He did break a rule, but the rule seems to be broken as a consequence of something else. And the something else in the Rashi was the frivolous behavior. The something else in the Malbim is the fact that there was a lack of divine consciousness and awareness of the presence of Hashem. But at the end of the day, it is about breaking a rule.
It's frivolity that causes a breaking of a rule. It's a lack of a consciousness and awareness that breaks a rule. The Radak gives us a third view here. The Radak says, it's a long Radak here, I won't do the whole thing, one second. Here. The Uza Shaga Kishaachas Bo Kilo Nasan Ki Im Livne Levi. And the Radak says it clearly. He just goes to, a rule was broken. Right? It was supposed to be carried by Levi. What a bunch of you said a few moments ago. But the Radak is not the only view. Mashkas of Lamala Kila Zarachev Kitchalishmur Haron Pirslishmur Habay Shayaba. One second. Sorry, hold on. Here. Virazal, right over here, on the side of the screen. Virazal. Virazal darshu bo, ki chata uza ve'echoz bo, lefi shechashav sheyipol ha'aron la'aretz, ki shamtu ha'bakar. Uza extended his hand, he thought the aron was going to fall. So again, he's breaking a rule, but it's not the breaking of the rule per se. It's the breaking of the rule, says the Radak, is in his mind, he didn't understand the power of the Aron. That he didn't realize, or he didn't appreciate the fact that the Aron could stand without anybody carrying it. The Amar al Davar Zeh Ne'enash, and says the Radak in the name of the Chachamim, it is for this that he is punished. The Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nosav Nosei Atzmo L'Kol Shekein V'Nosav V'Nosei Perashnim Sefer Yoshua. Okay, so again, he should have thought better. He should have understood better. He should have known better. The frivolity, the lack of thinking, a lack of having an appreciation for the presence of Hashem, not understanding the power of the Aron. All of these things, one way or another, lead to the consequence of breaking a rule. Now, that being the case, I think it is fair to ask the question. Why is it that here, David, it says, David v'chol ha'am mesachakim, they're all dancing, when Uzzah, touches the Aron, there's a terrible consequence here. But, a few psukim later, second try, we have David HaMelech here. Let's read the psukim. Right, Vayal David here, right in front, pasuk right in front of you. Vayal Esar Nal Kimi Beis Ovein Adom Ir David B'Simcha. He brings it up with great joy. The David Mecharker B'Chol Oz. He is dancing. Pasuk 14. Pasuk 15. The David Chol Beis Yisrael Malav Esar Hashem B'Truag V'Chol Shofar. They're blowing trumpets and blowing the shofar. And Michal is looking on this, and she sees David mefazez umecharker. He's spinning and twirling and dancing, and she finds this objectionable. So, how do we see here? Esther said, "Well, over there it was frivolity. Over here, it's in the context of reverence. How does one possibly see that over here? Why don't the mefarshim say?" That Michal was right. What is leading anybody to say that this was dancing in the context of something which was not frivolous, but rather awesome and greatly reverent? And I think the answer is one is, I think, more clear, and the one is a little bit less clear. So here it tells us, Pasuk 15. Pasuk 14, David Mecharker, he is dancing with all his strength. So if David is dancing with all his strength, well, that could go either way. He's either dancing with awe and reverence, or he's dancing with frivolity. How do we know it's one way or the other? So Pasuk 15 says, David v'chol beis Yisrael. Remember with Uzzah, it said David and the entire people. It was a mob. So you have the same words over here, David v'chol beis Yisrael. Why is David v'chol beis Yisrael dancing there, frivolous behavior? But David and the whole people dancing now is not frivolous behavior. So the pasuk gives us an indication. David v'chol beis Yisrael, malim es aron Hashem, they were bringing up the aron Hashem, b'trua uv'kol shofar. Right, so they were doing the trua, the blowing of the shofar. So whenever we've had the blowing of the shofar in the past, it's always been in the context of awe and reverence. Maybe it's going out to war. Maybe it's when they caused the walls of Jericho to tumble, and they had a ceremony for 6 days and the seventh day and blowing the shofaros. Right. We have blowing the shofar by Har Sinai. The presence of the blowing of the shofar, that in itself indicates to us the mindset. But there's another hint over here, and that is the word mecharker. The word mecharker itself should give us a hint. So if you look at, I don't have it on your screen, but if you look at the pasuk, if you happen to have unkelus, so the pasuk says, pasuk, go back to Uzzah first. Pasuk 5, the David v'chol beis Yisrael, David and the whole gang, the whole of Israel, right? Misachakim lifnei Hashem, and unkelus says over there, David v'chol beis Yisrael mishabchin kadam Hashem. They were praising Hashem. So Unkelus, interestingly enough, Unkelus sees, doesn't think it was frivolous behavior. And now if you take a look at Unkelus in our Pasuk, in Pasuk, 14, V'David mecharker b'choloz, Unkelus says V'David meshabeach. David was praising. So Unkelus seems to say there's no difference over here. They're praising over there. He does not accept that misachakim or mecharkerim in either context was frivolous behavior. So what's going on? What is the difference? Furthermore, if you take a look at I don't have it for you, but I'm just going to read it for you. The Maharikara. Maharikara says that mefazez u'mecharker means merakeid u'mesachek. That David was dancing umesachek, right? The same word as we had by Uzzah. So if Unkelus says that they were the same in that they were both not frivolous, Maharikara is saying they were both the same in that way, in that they were both frivolous. So what's the distinction here between the two? I want to draw your attention.
Can you say, what was the name of the next
Glassman
that you said?
The Maharikara. Not Rav Yosef Cairo.
Who was Maharikara?
He was one of the Rishonim. So take a look here at the one other time that we have the word Mecharker in Tanakh, as far as I'm aware. Or one other significant time. And that is in Yeshaya. Pasuk in Yeshaya, chapter 66, says the following. Pasuk 21. Let's see. Let me move this aside here. So we'll just go up one or two psukim here. And the pasuk says, the Navi says the following. The time has come. The time has come. Anochi... and Anochi Maaseim Umachshvoseim Ba'a Lekabetzes Kol Hagoyim Halshanos. So the pasuk says, "I know the deeds and the purposes of the people, and the time has finally come to gather all the nations and of the world, and they shall come and behold my glory. Right? So this is a vision of a great future. V'samti bahem os, and I will set a sign amongst them. V'shilachti mehem pleitim el hagoyim, and send from them the survivors to the nations, to Tarshish, to Pul, to Lud, to Tuval, Yavan, and the distant coast that have never heard my fame nor beheld my glory. They shall declare my glory among the nations. And here we have our pasuk. V'heviu es kol acheichem mikol hagoyim, and out of all the nations, said Hashem, they shall bring all your brothers, basusim, barechev, batzabim, baprodim, uvakir karos. We shall bring, in other words, the Jews will come back, el har kadshi ti Yerushalayim, on horses, on chariots, on drays, on mules, and on kir karos. What are kir karos? What are kir karos? So here, the Mefarshim explained, kir karos are, let's see if I have it right in front of you. Kir karos, second, are camels, but not just any camels. Kir karos are camels of great distinction. So the Jews are going to be brought back to Eretz Yisrael on these honorable, camels, with great honor and dignity and pomp and circumstance. Like, says the pasuk, let's go back to our pasuk, Kasher yaviu b'nei Yisrael ha'mincha b'klita ar beis Hashem. Just like the Jewish people bring their offerings on a pure vessel to beis Hashem. So the people coming on the karkaros are similar to karbanos being brought in pure vessels. So the word karkar doesn't just mean dancing, but the word karkar in this context, here, Ibn Ezra says, I have it on the side of your screen over here. V'hu min nichbad mehagamal. It is a type of very beautiful and stately animal, a type of camel. So the word that the Navi used, now let's go back to Shmuel. The word that the Navi uses to tell us that David was dancing was the word karkar. And the word karkar also means this very elegant and stately and refined animal, on which the Navi Yeshaya later on tells us that the Jewish people will be transported to Har Kodshi. So the Navi itself is telling us that the mindset of David and the whole mob was different in the time of Uzzah versus David and the whole mob the second time around. Now, that being the case, we have one. We have one last thing to ask, and that is, why is it that dancing is dancing? Whether you're dancing with good kavanas, you're dancing with frivolous kavanas, it doesn't make a difference what's in your head from a certain perspective. It's still when people dance, it is they're letting their hair down a little bit, even if they're doing it l'shem mitzvah and all good things. But I think the distinction here between Uzzah and David is, as Michael pointed out earlier, but just to put a point on it, is that Uzzah did an action which was against an explicit pasuk in the Torah. Did not David do that as well? You have to have mora. You have to have honor for the Beis Hamikdash, for the Aron. So the answer is no. He was having honor for the Aron. He was having honor. The problem with Uzzah was not simply that there was maybe frivolous behavior, but it's frivolous behavior that led to action. And it's the action for which he's being held responsible for. An action which undermines the whole integrity of what it means to be the people of the Torah. in the context of David, you know, maybe it was frivolous, maybe not. The Navi indicates that it wasn't. But even just the whole thing of dancing itself didn't lead to an action which undermines the integrity of the institution of Judaism. People would look at Uzzah and say, oh, this is how you do it. Nobody is looking at David and saying, this is how you do it, and end up doing something wrong. So the distinction here between the two is very different. So if that's the case, what really is Michal's critique? Did she not know what her husband was doing? Well, maybe the reason that she's punished is because she didn't investigate sufficiently. Had she investigated, she would have realized he wasn't doing anything wrong. But she has a very specific critique, as Michael pointed out. Her critique is not that she's showing disrespect to Hashem. Her critique is that she's showing that he will appear stately honor amongst the people. And this is where Michal shows that she's the daughter of Shaul, and she's not really yet the wife of David. Because this was Shaul's problem his whole life. Shaul's problem is, what will the people say? What will the people look and think? And David and Shaul acted on that. And here you have it coming in full relief. Michal Bas Shaul says to David, what will the people think? And you know what David responds? I don't care what the people think. What the people think is not really important right now. If the people think that I am, if the people see that I am conducting myself in a lowly fashion before Hashem, and that is what they see, trust me, Michal, they're going to draw the right conclusion. If the king acts that way before Hashem, then maybe we have to act that way as well. In other words, don't let what the people see or think potentially determine what you do. You do the right thing. And the right thing, says David, is for a person to be shafel ruach before Hashem. There is a principle in Judaism called mechze ki yoharem, which means that a person shouldn't act in public in a very overly pious way because it seems arrogant. So, you know, but you can ask the question, like, you know, what's the cutoff point for that? Let's say he's a person who's Shomer Shabbos. People say, oh, look at that guy. He's Shomer Shabbos. What an arrogant person. No, we're not concerned when it comes to doing the right thing that people will say you're arrogant. When it comes to doing the right thing, you have to do the right thing one way or another. When it comes to, you know, a chumrah, when it comes to a minhag, when it comes to something that sets you apart from the rest of the community in an overly pious way, which is not fulfilling the essential law itself, that leads to a perception of arrogance. And you have to be concerned that people will not look at you as arrogant, that you should not come off looking arrogant. But this notion of mechzik yohara, of being concerned that you appear arrogant, is only on the margins, not on the essence of the law itself. And I think that's exactly what's going on over here with David and Michal. Michal's critique is, what will the neighbors say? She's Michal Bas Shaul. And David turns around and says, no, that's not the right calculus. The calculus is this what the Torah demands of me? And if this is what the Torah demands of me, I don't care what people think. If this is, you know, just a fine point on what the Torah demands of me, this is a chumrah, this is being, you know, sort of overly pious, then I should be concerned about how I'm going to come off looking super arrogant. But that's not what's going on here in this story with David and Michal and the bringing up of the Aron. When he's dancing in front of the Aron and he makes himself look, less than regal, and it is less than regal, that's okay, says David. And this is the distinction between David HaMelech and the legacy of Shaul. So Michal, the daughter of Shaul, comes to him and says, what will the people think? And David says, don't worry about what the people think. The reign of Shaul is over. Do you know? Let's go back to the Pesukim, and with this we'll conclude. I'll share my screen with you again. What was her critique, and what did David say? And what did David say to her? Here is her critique. She says to him, "Ma nichbad hayom melech Yisrael? What have you done today to bring honor to the to Israel?" You've conducted yourself just like a riffraff in front of the common. You conducted yourself like a commoner amongst the commoners. Vayomer David and Michal, and now David says to Michal, "Lefnei Hashem asher bachar bimeat, Hashem chose me over your father." He's not saying stop talking about your father. That's not what he's saying. He's saying Shaul is representative of a way of thinking, of a Weltanschauung, of a whole philosophy of life. And Hashem chose my philosophy over me because of my philosophy over your father and his philosophy. This is not about, about how sons-in-laws and father-in-laws and wives are getting, should be getting along about parents and parents-in-laws. This is about two world views. And he says, Asher bachar bimei avicha, you know why Hashem chose me over your father and the household? Is because I danced in front of Hashem. Unikalosi, Pasuk 22, Unikalosi od mizos ve'isi shafal be'enai. I'm willing to make myself small in front of Hashem. Ve'im ha'imaos asher amart, regarding the slave girl women, the commoners, imami kaveda, you don't worry about that. I will be honored by them. Because when I do the right thing, I'm sure that the right consequences will follow. And now the parak concludes. Michal ba'ashol lo haya yelen ad yom mosa, and Michal ba'ashol suffered a consequence. She had no more children. And whether this means literally or figuratively, at least I would like to suggest it means that this way of thinking about being concerned about what the other people are going to think, this has no future. Michal Bashol lo haya la yaled. She had no. There's no future to this. Raise another generation thinking about what people think. There's no future in that type of philosophy. It's just self-defeating. And therefore, this parak, which is about bringing the Aron up to Yerushalayim, is not just about bringing the Aron up to Yerushalayim. It's really about demonstrating for us two important principles. Principle number one is that at the end of the day, what is significant is that there is a law, there is a Torah, there are directives, and those things have to be upheld. With all the good intent. And let's assume Uzzah had the best of intentions. He wasn't trying to do the wrong thing. He had the best of intentions. Uncle says, Mishabeach. When they were dancing, they were trying to give honor to Hashem. So it's not about bad intentions, but it's about inappropriate actions that resulted. So that's number one. All the good intentions in the world are great, but at the end of the day, if I'm religious in my heart, but my actions are violating the Torah's laws, that's a problem. I always like to share that when I was a kid, I remember I was coming home, walking home once on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, and a woman pulled up in her car. She rolled down the window. It was in New Jersey, and she rolled down the window, and she said, "When is Rosh Hashanah over?" And I said, "It's over tonight at, I don't know, 6 p.m., whatever I said." And she said, "Oh, my rabbi said it was over today at Chatzos, or the equivalent thereof." So, she mentioned some temple that that she goes to. So good intentions are great, but it has to be within the confines of the structure of the Torah law itself. That's point number one. As when the Aron is being established in Yerushalayim, and point number two, when the Aron is being established in Yerushalayim, is that the way we conduct ourselves in light of the Aron, i.e., the Torah, is we don't care what other people think. If I have to be Shomer Shabbos, I'm Shomer Shabbos whether people think it's ridiculous or not. If I have to be Shomer Shabbos, I'm Shomer Kashrus. I'm Shomer Kashrus whether people think that's an antiquated, you know, idea or not. If I am, required to observe Shemitah, I observe Shemitah whether it is resonant in the modern, the modern philosophy or not. When it comes to doing the Torah, it's not whether it garners me friends and influence. It's whether it's the right thing to do or not. That has to be the calculus. And when David establishes the Aron as the center of the capital of the Jewish people, he's basically, I believe, making these two, as it is established in this parak, he's making these two essential points. Point number one, about the importance of the directive of the mitzvah, and point number two, about the pride we have to have in doing the mitzvah, regardless of the calumny that might be brought upon us for doing what is right. Okay, any thoughts or comments before we head off for tonight?
Yeah, this is really so applicable in today's moral climate with this world, the cancel culture, everything else, that we just have to ignore all that. We have to do what's right. We have to hold by the Torah, have the Torah sees it's right and morally correct, and just, stay away from everything else that's going on.
I think it is certainly relevant in a modern context in which there are certainly flows of philosophy and the flow of moral history that could very well not be in consonance with Torah's morality. So yeah, I think that's I think it certainly is relevant not only in the time of David, but it is also relevant today. Any other thoughts or comments before we head off? Nope, that's it. Okay. All right, folks. So, yeah, Michael, you wanted to say something?
No, I just want to say yes, God. I just want to share. Thank
you. Okay. Okay, folks, have a good evening. And
how long does it take for the YU Torah to put this on its line?
It's as long as it takes me to do it. I
mean, do it, because there's somebody there in Israel who wants to hear it.
Okay, I will, Amir Tashem, try to get it done more quickly than less quickly.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Good night, Rabbi. Be well, everyone.